for July the 24th, 2015, we talk about the Minecraft movie, Monaco, What's Yours is Mine, and we ask you which characters you would like to see in Smash Brothers. Welcome to the 113th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We drink up all the Hennessy off of your shelf, and then we just introduced ourselves. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Going good.
I'm drunk on Hennessy.
Yeah. What the hell is Hennessy?
It is it's a liqueur, I believe.
Biden's drink of choice.
Is it really?
No, that's just a deep onion reference.
Oh, okay. Yep, Diamond Joe. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I don't have any like pre-ramble or whatever. Does anybody have an anecdote from the past week?
I actually have one.
Okay.
I don't know if I talk about this too much. I think I've confirmed that my job is actually creating.
Oh, because you're like doing like shit, right?
Right. Well, we were working on the
The serious question, David, is that classified at all? Will G-Men show up if I release that audio?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Just the singular G-Man.
I honestly call I'll let you know tomorrow. I'll just say like, hey, is that something I can mention?
Okay, so people may have just heard a couple of bars of classical gas there instead of that cool anecdote.
That if you can't do it, you should still play the audio and just bleep all the stuff that you
bleep
can't
all
say.
The pertinent details. Okay, so the bleeping gets like that gag has like about 10 seconds. I did not say it to continue the joke. Damn it, I have to bleep that too. Fuck.
So,
well, we'll see if that was nonsense or if that is a thing people can hear about the things you do at work. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. I'm looking out for everybody's well-being. You know,
yeah.
Caution is the better part of discretion. What? You know, that's let's pretend that's a saying. So we've got the usual.
Sounded like a saying.
Yeah, I know, right? You say it with gravitas into this sweet, sweet microphone. No, we've got the usual litany this week. We've got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. So let us get to
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. I'm going to go first here with a story that I don't know if it'll make Ben directly happy, but it is about something that Ben is interested in.
Oh yeah,
you've got my story.
God damn it! Did we all swoop? We all swoop.
No, this was not mine, but I think I saw it.
Yeah. So, Star Wars: Knights of the Old Republic 2, up until like just today, as of when we're recording, it was kind of hard to play on a modern system. Like, you could buy it on Steam, but really it only ran on Windows, and you had to figure out how to patch it and stuff, and it's a big hassle. For as good as that game is, I'm led to believe, by Ben, it is a kind of a technical nightmare. However, Aspyr, which is kind of a PC developer that handles a lot of like classic game ports or like, you know, Mac ports of kind of like mid-level games or whatever. Like Aspyr, they've got, you know, they're out there doing a bunch of work. They have updated their kind of release of the digital version of Knights of the Old Republic to like run on basically everything. They added Steam achievements. They've got cloud saves, native resolution support, controller support, and Steam Workshop support. So there can be like custom maps and mods and stuff put into it, basically making sure that KOTOR 2 is like compatible and will be compatible as long as the Steam ecosystem, you know, stays the way that it is.
So are they going to finish the game though?
I don't know that they're going to finish it. However, one of the, you know, patches that's out there is kind of the restored content mod or the cut content mod, which lets you actually like put in a bunch of stuff they cut out or that was dummied out of the final release. I've heard kind of mixed things about how good that is or even how good the content is, but the Steamworks side of this makes it much easier to deal with.
Yeah, suffice to say it will get better over time if it's not good at the start.
Yeah. Well, that mod has been around for years and years too. So it's going to be up to you to decide, you know, if you want that historical oddity or not.
Is this is it compatible with Linux?
Yes.
The reason I ask that is like it's very conceivable that in particular Windows eventually screws things up again, so that you know it becomes unplayable again. But just by the nature of the operating system, it being compatible with Linux means it probably will be playable indefinitely.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm talking about this 11-year-old game and being, you know, kind of effusive about it, but like I always beat that drum about how important it is that this stuff stay updated and compatible, and the fact that there's still movement on this beloved game, unfinished though it is, nowadays, to make it easier to play is good for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, I think how you do archival or like museum library type stuff with digital media, it kind of seems like is a legitimate problem.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I definitely can see that.
How do you feel about this, Ben?
I just want a Knights of the Republic 3. So that's cool. I mean, it's a good game. I don't think I'll ever play it again just because it's so long, but I mean, I like it.
You've played it like a couple times, right? Like you've gotten multiple endings and stuff.
Yeah. I've definitely done a light side run through and a dark side run through, and I may have done a couple other run throughs, but I cannot remember.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I just checked, and my version that I own of it on Steam, I think I used the code off of the back of the copy that you got me, Ben, to mm-hmm. redeem that. It is now installable on Mac on the machine that I record on. So
nice.
Yeah. It is like right there and good and available. So that controller support thing is pretty cool too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Who wants to go next?
Well, that sure, was my I've... story. So
swooped. Go ahead,
sure,
David.
I've kind of got something. Apparently, Shenmue 3 has ended its Kickstarter, and it earned $6.3 million, which was three times its goal of $2 million. But the main reason I chose this story is because I want to ask, what the frack is Shenmue?
Huh.
Like, as far as I can tell, it's basically, like, the only thing I've gotten from it is that there's a pretty boy and a chick who wears, like, old lady hats.
Right, and he jumps over a stream.
The leaf pond. Don't forget the leaf pond.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can give you a history lesson on it, but what I will say was in 1999, Shenmue was a very revolutionary game in that it was open world and a faithful recreation of a small town in Japan from the late 80s that was developed by Yu Suzuki, the guy who did like Virtua Fighter and kind of the one of the main luminaries behind Sega's arcade division. This was a massive game that did a lot of stuff that was new at the time, however, is kind of boring to play and hard to go back to. It was also one of the most, or no, it was the most expensive game ever made for a good long while. It was like $40 million or something like that, and I may even be undercutting it there. So,
with this $40 million, like, pre-inflation?
Yes, this was the, like just like a massive budget. Like it went way over budget, way over time, which makes it perfect for Kickstarter.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this was analysis I was reading. Maybe it was Penny Arcade's analysis. Some others just pointing out the fact that basically it's kind of a scam that, you know, the actual funding of this is really going to end up being Sony.
I mean, I don't know, like, so scam is a weird thing. It does obfuscate the actual real cost of what these things, you know, of what a game, you know, cost to develop. That was a weird sentence, and I'm sorry that I said it so fucked up like that. But yeah, but so it's kind of like a Bloodstain. We talked about this, you know, around the time they, like, when they announced it, like in our E3 show, right? Like, we actually, okay, you know, like we brought this up. So I'm sorry if we're covering old ground, but like Bloodstained, the, you know, Metroidvania game or whatever that's coming out from Itagaki, not Itagaki, he's a different guy. But that game, they were pretty upfront by saying, hey, this is only 10% of the total budget of the game. We are doing this to show outside investors that we, that there's enough interest in this. Sure. And they exceeded their goal and did all their stuff. And this is just a strategy that kind of bigger developers or people with bigger names are using Kickstarter to, you know, take advantage of, right? Demonstrating this, mm-hmm, notwithstanding the fact that kind of a niche thing like Shenmue is, probably it's only going to be your most loyal fans who are going to buy it. Most of those people probably already backed the Kickstarter. Maybe you already sold what you're going to sell.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder if, I know, this sort of strikes me as something that very well could be like, it only has legs from nostalgia, that, you know, that, you know, I'm not sure that type of game, can that really live in the modern world?
I don't know. Like, they're probably only going to sell it to people who played Shenmue 3 or the original Shenmue when it was contemporary, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I could just very much see this doing, like, the Duke Nukem Forever thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, the original game went massively, okay, so this is 15 years ago, it's kind of shitty to hold it against them. It went massively over budget, massively over timeline, so it makes it perfect for Kickstarter. I don't know.
Yep.
Womp. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, my story is short and really bizarre, but the first part of it is they're making a Minecraft movie.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that's going to go, but
wait,
the
Ben,
second part
Ben,
of it,
we need to stop. Stop. How are you not the one who brought the coder story?
Well, being the person that I am, I scramble for stories at the last minute, so I was looking after the coder story was...
Explain. Ah, okay.
Attaboy.
Not to put you on breeze. I was just curious.
I'm feeling the breeze, man. But no, that's, you know, if nobody else had mentioned that, I would have brought it up. But, you know,
got it.
I will fall back to this story instead. So they're making a Minecraft movie, and the weird part about it is Rob McElroy. I don't think that's how you pronounce his name. The Mac from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia
McElhinney,
is going to be the director of it. Yeah. So that's the more weird part, perhaps. Mac's directing a Minecraft movie. So.
Yep. So Rob McElhinney, the guy who created It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, directing the Minecraft movie. That is super weird, right?
Yep.
What's the plot going to be? I don't know. Like, I feel like it's hard for me to say how weird it is just because it entirely depends what they think a Minecraft movie is.
I don't know. So, like, I would have been much more skeptical about this if the Lego movie hadn't been, like, heartwarming and amazing.
And if there weren't, like, a million Minecraft novels out. Like, there is an entire Minecraft...
Yeah.
There's an entire Minecraft book section.
Yep.
Hold on. We're going to play a game. Hold on.
Dennis has turned into our resident Jigsaw.
Yeah, well, I let us down in that regard.
Oh, you were supposed to be Jigsaw?
I'm usually the one who,
wants to play a game.
I'm hoping for just some sort of, like, the movie just being straight up, like, Lynch-style surrealism. That's my vote for what a Minecraft movie should be.
I mean, so it can't be that different than the Lego movies, just like ode to creativity from a company that sells model kits. But, you know, let's just brush that under the rug.
See, I'd change that. It shouldn't be different than that. It totally could be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it totally can be.
Minecraft
but like,
movie can be whatever the freak you want, and therefore I hope they choose the weirdest thing possible.
I'm going to be shocked, or at least curious, to see what this kind of vulgar guy does with a kids movie. You know?
See, I guess what I'm saying is I'm going to be sorely disappointed if it's not rated R.
So one thing I should point out too is he wasn't the initial director for the movie. Originally the guy who did Night at the Museum was the director, but he proposed his idea for the movie and they did not like it. So they got another director. So
I would feel pretty bad if my idea was decided to be too unrealistic for a Minecraft movie.
All right, I'm back. We're going to play a game.
Okay.
The game is, I'm going to say a title, and you're going to tell me if it is a real Minecraft novel or a made-up Minecraft novel.
This is quick. Wow, that's a quick turnaround.
I'm going to need someone. I have no idea how to score or try it, but yeah, feel free to play along at home, audience.
Okay.
All right, first one. Revenge of the Creeper.
Fake.
I'm going to go with real.
I'm going to guess it's a real novel, but not a Minecraft novel.
It is fake.
Ha-ha. Okay.
Next up, Invasion of the Overworld.
That one's real.
Yeah, I'll say real.
That seems like it must be.
Yes, that's correct. It is real.
There's no punchline to it. It has to be real.
Yeah. Okay, so both of these have been incredibly bland.
This is true. We'll see if we can punch it up a little bit. The Journey into the Nether.
Oh boy, I sure hope that stars The Rock and Brendan Fraser. No. I'm going to say real.
I'll say fake.
I'm going to have to say real, although I'm totally not just saying real to all of them.
It is real.
Hmm.
I think that one I actually saw at Barnes & Noble's, to be fair.
Again, it's just inoffensive enough. It invokes something that kids will know about from Minecraft. So just so we know, the score right now is Cole 3, Ben 1, David 2.
Are these like fan written? These are not authorized, correct?
A lot of them are actually fan fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fan fiction that found a publisher, which seems like, how much do you want to bet that all those people just collectively shit their pants when Microsoft bought them? it only could have been worse if Disney bought Minecraft. Go ahead, Dennis.
Next up, Minecraft, a gardening handbook.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with fake, but I think what I interrupted Cole saying is it's something that I totally could see being real, but I'm gonna go with fake.
I'll go with fake as well, even though that doesn't improve my standings.
I'm gonna go with real.
That is fake.
Oh wow. So David and I are tied.
Yeah. Final one. The Big Book of Minecraft Jokes.
Oh.
I'm going to say fake.
David.
Oh. And I'm like, Nether, I hardly know her. I'm sorry, no. Enderman. What?
So, wait, I feel like somebody hit me over the back. I want to see this joke eventually work.
I feel like somebody hit me over the back of the head.
So, what are the entries?
Okay, I say fake. David says fake.
David said fake too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I will say real then, just as a chance to tie it up.
The Big Book of Minecraft Jokes is 100% real.
Oh!
Boom!
How did that happen? How did we all end up with the same score? Oh, tell me you got some sweet, sweet excerpts.
When it comes to Minecraft fan fiction, the only way to win is not to play.
Just for real, like on the Amazon page for the big book of Minecraft jokes, like tell me they gave you some kind of sample. Like,
no,
like let them get, like, just let me dip my snoot in that till. Come on.
There's I'm on a page for it and there are no excerpts, so I'm gonna keep on looking. Maybe there will be more. But I hope I can find it. Let's see. But yes, okay, that is the end of the game.
Okay.
I found the world's worst Minecraft pickup line when I searched for Minecraft jokes.
What is it?
Do you have a diamond pickaxe? Because I'm harder than obsidian.
Ugh.
That's just horrible.
How good is Minecraft?
Wait, hold on.
Top notch.
Oh, here you go. Here we go. All right. Hey, guys. What comes before Torch Day? Woodness Day.
What the fuck is woodness?
Player one, I heard there's a new block coming to Minecraft on the next update. Player two, is it Prismarine?
Boo.
I'm gonna flip a table.
Player one, no, something better. They say it's a cross of air blocks and water blocks. Then Breeze Marine.
There's blood coming out of my pores, Dennis.
How do you make clothes smooth in Minecraft? You use iron.
That's okay. That kind of at least makes sense.
Our children are doomed.
Yeah, I honestly, like, I'd be interested to know, to someone who plays Minecraft enough a lot, do those make any sense?
No, they don't.
No, they don't. This is my favorite so far because I've been reading almost every joke to you. What did the island say to the other island in Minecraft? I will sand the message to you later. And then just in case you didn't get it, in parentheses after the answer is send, to clarify what they meant when they said.
Oh, so they're giving notes. There's like stage instructions.
Oh my God. Okay, sorry. But
okay, actually,
none of that is usable.
No, I'm keeping it all in. Everybody needs to hurt as much as we do. We are now Metal Gear Solid villains. We are inflicting the pain that we have felt upon the rest of the world. Okay, scanning this one page, I actually found a kind of good one in that it is dad jokey, but it at least makes some semblance of sense.
Sure.
What do you get if you push a music box down a mine shaft? A flat minor. So, anyway.
Yeah, I feel like the first several of these kind of remind me of, have you ever seen any of the, like, the computer programs the people have tried to program to generate jokes?
No.
Okay, sorry.
Is this Markov chains?
Those jokes are basically what you end up with.
They used an artificial stupidity algorithm.
Huh. Can we stop this?
All right.
Let's please.
Multiplayer.
It is now time for the multiplayer, where we ask you all a question. And by you all, I mean you listening, Steve.
Y'all.
Yes, where we ask y'all a question round these parts. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
This one's actually courtesy of David, so I think David should intro it.
Sure. So, to celebrate Evo, what we're asking is, what Super Smash Bros, I guess, what character would you most like to see added to Super Smash Bros?
Okay.
To be fair, Super Smash Bros, it does not have a period on the Facebook question, so he's pronouncing it correctly.
I guess.
Oh, I was always pronouncing it correctly.
That's true too.
Does anybody remember the poll results? I feel like I was vindicated by the poll results, but We'd have to.
I think the full results was quit having polls about grammar.
Ben, did you go to Evo this year?
I did not, because I found out it was this weekend. I looked for tickets, but the registration was closed in early July. So whoa. I watched a stream.
Wow.
But I was fine with that, too.
Mm. Oh, well.
It was a similar experience without the driving.
Is Evo, I take it, the fighting game, the like fighting game esports thing?
You put the question out.
Yeah,
I did
say in celebration not, of Evo. I did not, you don't know
to
what
be fair,
is.
I did not reference Evo when I suggested the question.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
This was just serendipity.
Hmm. I will pick us up with Franz, who says, the answer, David, is yes. That is fighting game esports Super Bowl.
See, okay, that kind of makes sense, because I have a friend who's really into fighting games,
mm-hmm.
but is also a excellent boxer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really hard from his Facebook statuses to tell when he's talking about which.
Mm-hmm. But Franz says, my first reaction was Solaire, but his character doesn't quite fit the gameplay of Smash Brothers. Knight Lautrec or good old trusty Patches might be a better fit. An Ice Climber style team up of Ornstein and Smo might be fun as well. These are characters from Dark Souls. Yeah, I want
just like a chibi Ornstein and Smo in Smash Brothers.
They wouldn't even necessarily have to be chibi. Like they didn't make him. They didn't make Snake all cute and tiny when they.
Oh, that's fair.
When they ported him over, yeah. No, if it was just like pixel perfect, Ornstein and Smo. Yeah, that'd be pretty good.
I could see Solaire working. I don't know. I could see that working.
Yeah, he would always have to have a teammate, though. Yeah,
that's true. So maybe he could be like a Pokemon style summon.
It's pretty good. You just you pick up the soapstone.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm. There's actually a number of these going down that even if they weren't characters, I could see being great like items or stages or stuff like that.
Hmm. David, what does our friend Tanner say?
Sure. Tanner says Garcia fucking Hotspur.
Yes, this is the main character from Shadows of the Damned, the Suda 51, and oh gosh, what's his name? Resident Evil 4 dude. Shinji Mikami, their kind of survival horror shooter action game.
Yep.
He swears a lot. And then Franz comes back in and says, ooh, yes, let's also get Travis touchdown in, because he was on the Wii.
Yeah, Travis is a character I'm actually really surprised isn't in it, just because, like, it seems like he, you know, fairly obviously translate, because No More Heroes is kind of already a fighting game.
Mm-hmm.
And also, that's pretty much the main game I heard about every time I heard about why someone should get a Wii.
Let's look here. Ben, what does Jacob say?
Jacob says, I think Shovel Knight would fit well. He already has a good moveset.
I would be curious how they animate him, actually, like how they bring him in. Like I wouldn't want them to make a fully polygonal, smoothly animated version of Shovel Knight. I would want them to do like Mr. Game & Watch, where he, was, you know, limited animation.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah, In the game, though, it's not as jerky as, like, the actual animation is, like, modern 2D animation, correct?
It's NES grade kind of stuff. Like, it's smooth, but it's not as, like, tweeny as the, you know, regular 3D animation would be.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that, although, because, I mean, Link already has the DuckTales bounce attack, so, I mean, there's definitely precedence.
Yeah, it would just have to be, like, a Marth and Darth situation or whatever.
Yeah. Is Darth actually a character?
No, I just don't know what the other character's name is. That wasn't a joke, that was just me being dismissive. Dennis, what's Steven say?
Yeah, Steven says, if we're sticking to Nintendo's catalog, then Simon Belmont. That's a really good choice.
Also a Konami.
But if we're, yeah, But if we're venturing into other consoles, then Shell from Portal would be awesome. Also, Jack and Daxter would be fun as another tag team idea. And Jack is actually in PlayStation All-Stars. So there is, it for anyone who's out there who's like, oh my god, that's a great idea, you can actually play that. Just not in Smash Bros.
Yeah.
So this was actually one of my, I think Chell would be very, very cool, but this was also one of mine that even if that she wasn't a character, I feel like having a portal gun as a pick-upable item or, you know, being able to, like, throw down one of the little talkie turrets would both be awesome. Also, I would love, you could do some really awesome portal-themed levels.
Yeah, that could be crazy.
Yeah, like it could be like a single flat level, kind of like floating in space that kind of looks like Aperture, but there's no features and no items.
That sounds like that the sounds perfect like Smash Bros. Level.
Sounds pretty final.
Just a wonderful destination.
I shake my head at you.
Let's see here. David Petrucco writes, Chocobo from Chocobo's Dungeon on the Wii. Amen, brother. That was going to be my answer before I saw you say that thing. He could change classes, right? Like he could be a little bit before Samus and Zero Suit Samus were different characters. And switch back and forth between them, or you know, Princess Zelda and Sheik, maybe. What? I don't know. I forget how that works. Did Peach turn into Sheik?
Spoiler alert! Wait, Peach? What?
Yeah, when Peach turned into Sheik and rescued King Dedede.
That's a real spoiler right there.
That's my that's my headcanon. But yeah, Chocobo, pretty good. Let's see here, David. What's Dustin say?
Sure, Dustin says, Sephiroth. You know what game he's from.
And then Tanner replies, Dirge of Cerberus.
Final Fantasy VI character is going to show up.
I know, right? It's so good. So many people forget Final Fantasy IX. gosh, Ben, what does Brian say?
Brian says, Lolo from the Adventures of Lolo games. I have no frame of reference for that.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
They're really fun little like puzzle game kind of things, mostly pushing blocks around. Not quite Sokoban level because there are enemies and stuff walking around, but yeah, there's like a whole bunch of them, and they are a good time.
Sure. It's like a ball with feet, or yes. A comma with feet.
Yeah, he's a little dude who's he's a little blob dude.
To be fair, like a ball with feet describes at least like four different characters in Super Smash Bros. So I feel like that's totally legitimate.
Yeah, just a palette swap, you know? You just got a Scorpion Sub-Zero that shit. Dennis, what does Alan say?
Alan says, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, just to see if it is actually possible to win against her. What?
Geopolitics burn! Oh man, you hopping up all in that parliamentary piece.
Is it really?
What?
What?
It is actually a German chancellor.
Yeah, Angela Merkel. She's like the president or prime minister or whatever Germany has. I am so ignorant and so sorry.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think elected or won trial by combat or whatever it is they do in Germany, like when we were freshmen.
Yeah.
And is
she's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, is still the overlord.
But so. She's cool. I like her.
Yeah. So honestly, like random serendipity, I was actually going to ask you after the show before I saw this, Ben, because I know you know you're a little bit familiar with kind of Germany. Do they just not have term limits? Like, is that just kind of Germany does have term limits or what?
Honestly, I'm not sure about that. I would have to look that up. But yeah, no, I have thought that over the last couple of years of like, oh yeah, she's still there. Cause she's been around since, I know in 2006, I went there and they commented on my last name being the same as hers, but right. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Cause like, I heard on NPR, she was going to like, raise, Greece or something. And I was kind of shocked that I didn't realize she was still
R-A-I-S-E or R-A-Z-E?
R-A-Z-E.
Well, no, she's going to. They were going to detach Greece from Europe and then, you know, put balloons on it and raise it up into the sun. So kind of both.
It's going to be like Bluthin. Yeah.
That is one of my favorite gags. It's the same basic principle. Can we just appreciate that gag from Arrested Development? It's literally 2 seconds of film. but they made that painting just for it. And the crazy pan flute music with it. Yep.
But I was going to say, what's impressive about this is Alan is making a Germany joke, but he lives in Australia and is from Ireland. So I don't even know what to think.
I think he's
a citizen of the world.
Yeah, I think that Alan is not quite a man without a country, but a man with an abundance of countries.
Man with all the countries. Such countries.
He's collecting them like Pokemon.
A man who can drive you to Google with his jokes.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that he was international. I just as I see his delightful Facebook picture of him looking up at his name every time he posts. It's kind of like, hey, that's me. I'll pick this up. Sam Bear writes in saying, "The wonderful 101, all of them as a single character."
I really like that idea.
Yeah, I need to play that. That apparently, just with my abiding love of all things Platinum, is a definite blind spot in my repertoire.
Yeah, I kind of like the idea of they did the ice climbers like you have two characters thing, and then to my knowledge never did anything with that again.
They left them out of the 3DS version the most recent version because the 3DS couldn't handle it. For some reason, there was some kind of like technical thing, and they didn't want to lose character and feature parity between the Wii U version and the 3DS version. That's my understanding of the way that it happened. But
my understanding is also, and like this, really isn't a part of gaming I'm really that familiar with, so I could be saying this wrong. But my understanding is that within people who are into like competitive Smash Bros, either they're not liked because they're considered cheap, or they're not liked because they're considered just like worthless and not any good. I'm not sure, but my understanding is for some reason they are kind of pariahs in like competitive Smash Bros.
Let me jump in. They're just not considered to be a strong character. However, some of the players can play them really well, and so some of the people in the tournament at Evo played as them.
Okay.
But that's a thing though, right? Like playing as a scrub tier just to piss off your opponent, like people playing Marvel versus Capcom and jumping in with the serve bots or whatever.
No, the serve bots. You can play with whoever the LEGO you want guys. Play with.
Yeah. Yes, serve bots are the Mega Man Legends guys. Yeah.
Okay.
Huh. David, what's Carlo say?
Carlo says Bionic Mando, Rad Spencer.
Yeah. Nathan Spencer in the reboot.
Who is Rad Spencer?
The main character of Bionic Commando.
Oh, okay.
The guy with the arm. What is his wife?
Yeah. That's also actually another character I'm a little surprised was added, just because it's so classic and it seems like one they could probably get the rights to and would be really, really cool.
So they're reaching across. Well, no, they just got Ryu, so like Capcom's willing to play ball. I just don't know that Rad Spencer has the same cultural cachet that Ryu does, or Pac-Man, or Sonic.
Yeah. I suppose that's probably one, again, that could be maybe a badass like item or level. Like, I'd like to at least see be in the game somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I don't know. I could see that being pretty cool. I think it'd be kind of interesting to make a character entirely like go the Just Cause route and build a character entirely around grapples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just make it a little bit more like a more drastic version of Samus.
Yeah,
I know Smash Brothers.
Samus with parachutes.
Let's see here, Ben. What's Kylo say?
Kylo says, quote from Cave Story, any Belmont from Castlevania games, and though it would never happen, Travis Touchdown from No More Heroes.
Cave Story would be pretty good.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Was that the main character or the lady robot?
That is the main character.
Okay.
The little robot boy. Yeah.
As a side note,
you don't have to say as a side note every time. Continue. Sorry.
Do not call out my verbal tics.
Who
feels like it should be pronounced Kilo Pascal?
Kylo sounds more like a name to me because it sounds like Kyle.
Okay. Oh yeah. I know. I'm just saying. Am I the only one that's how I like instinctively read it?
And he's also kind of a new commenter, so he hasn't gotten frustrated with us yet.
Yeah, we will put your name in to fix it. Just ask Mikhail Hill or whatever his name is.
Yeah, Mikhail.
Yeah,
you mean that super nice guy who writes in a lot. Yeah.
What's up, Mikhail?
What up, man? Let's see here.
Oh, he comments later.
Oh yeah. So we'll fuck it up later too. Dennis, what does Robin say?
Robin says the entire wonderful 101, make them tiny compared to the rest of the opponents, and a group character like the Ice Climbers. Makes sense since they're already a Nintendo exclusive. And while we're on a Platinum/Clover blend, throw in Bayonetta and Beautiful Joe.
Beautiful Joe would be pretty sweet.
What, did I miss the Beautiful Joe train or something?
Maybe.
Yes. Including levels that take place on a train.
It was one of those weird ones that was just like a GameCube exclusive as part of Capcom's we are going to make games only for the GameCube until we port them to PS2 later on. Yes, it was just like a here is a revival of a classic brawler kind of feel back when Platinum was still Clover.
Oh, you know what? I am confusing Beautiful Joe with Joe Danger.
Oh, yeah, that's like an indie game kind of thing, right?
Yeah, that is, what studio is that? That's Hello Games, mm-hmm. Of course. So that's soon to be eclipsed by No Man's Sky character.
Beautiful Joe, I realize I've said this like three times, but that's honestly is one I truly am surprised never got in, simply because it seems like it fits the aesthetic real well.
Yeah. It does, but, and like it's already like a button mashy kind of fighting game. Like they could really port it over pretty well. He would fit in.
Yeah. Bayonetta would be kind of cool. I feel like it'd be really easy to do, you know, to fill out like some of the super moves and, you know, the final smash and mm-hmm. stuff like that, simply because she has so many awesome, just over the top moves from the game.
I would be curious to see how they tamed her down, actually.
Yeah, that's actually one thing I was wondering with a couple of these, like Travis Touchdown too. Like none of the characters in Smash Bros. That I can think of are from games that would be really like at all risque or like not family friendly. Like about the closest thing would be Metal Gear, you know, Solid, and those are still, you know, your basic, you know, can kind of be classified as your basic, you know, America war movie thing.
Yeah, like there's a little bit of sexy stuff, but it's definitely not front and center.
Right. So like I wonder if that could be a limiting thing, you know, especially on Bayonetta. Like I don't know how you could. That's kind of a lot of the characters stick in terms of aesthetic design.
Yeah, I can see your tots being real fun though.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
that, it would be a great character. You could have a lot of fun with that.
Bayonetta is so good. Let's see here. Jossie Payton, or Patayan. Whoa, sorry. Like we are messing up names left and right. Jossie Patayan says, Rayman, Beautiful Joe, Belmont, Bayonetta, or Crash Bandicoot. Rayman would be great.
Oh, Rayman would be so good.
Yeah. I could see that, but like I'm so used to seeing Rayman again in that beautiful hand-drawn style now. Like it'd be really hard to go back to Rayman 2 and 3 for that.
Do you think they'd have to completely abandon it to get him into Smash Bros?
Didn't they just they made that engine to make him look as good as possible, right?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
To make everything, literally everything, look as good as possible.
God,
you were playing a Saturday morning cartoon.
So, am I wrong? Like, Belmont could be a lot of characters, right? Is there, like, one archetypical like character from the game that would probably be the one they would use if they decided to add a Castlevania character?
It'd probably be Simon, although Trevor gets lots of play.
Okay.
Yeah.
Both of them, like, lots of whips and stuff?
Yeah, they're both the whippy Belmonts. Yeah, Trevor Belmont is the guy who turns up, I think, in, like, Symphony of the Night and in, like, one of the more... Oh, yeah, he's in Castlevania 3. He's the guy there, too. So, yeah, either of those could be good. Alucard would be fun as well. Like, get him to turn into mist and shit.
Yeah,
he transforms into Mist Island.
Yeah. was he the very effeminate one from the Game Boy Advance?
No, you're thinking of what's his name? Soma,
yes.
Man, I'm just hitting with these polls, guys.
Now, granted, no one is checking to see whether or not you're right.
No. Well, no, I am.
No, although I do remember furiously he's right Googling. About at least that one.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it.
Guys, we are up against the 25-minute time limit that we set for this.
Womp.
I feel like we should at least power through, sort of, but...
No comments. Henry says... Shovel Knight and Isaac from Golden Sun are my top two picks for this.
Hmm. Let's see here. I forgot about this. Dennis, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. John, King K. Rule, a Nintendo classic baddie, and we need more baddies.
Ricardo writes, Snow Brothers, they are already Japanese as fuck.
Yep.
Mikhail says, Hedwig from Hedwig and the Angry Itch.
Inch. Yeah.
That sounds like a porno title.
It is a weird Broadway play. Also a movie. Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Trent says, Wave Warrior Games has been pushing for Shantae. I think she'd be a great fit. Also, this is obligatory. And it's a Shovel Knight poster.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Shovel Knight winning the popularity. Dennis.
So, that's Phil now?
Yes.
Phil says, Waluigi, hands down. Failing that, Rad Spencer, because why the hell not?
And then finally, Grant writes in saying, Banjo and Kazooie.
Oh! How are they not in there already? Mm-hmm.
That's another one from the How Is That Not Happened camp. But...
That's Rare, right? Like, Rare owns that shit, so it's really hard to, you know, I could see that being a technical thing. Also, Rare is owned by Microsoft, so unless Microsoft wants to play ball.
Yeah. So it's kind of it's like a Why Isn't Crash Bandicoot in PlayStation All-Stars kind of deal.
Kind of, yeah. So I already said mine, Chocobo. I would love to have that in there, but I would want to hear you all's...
With a Z.
So if you can do Rare games, I think having James Bond from GoldenEye would be pretty awesome. I also want to second the idea of Chell. I think that would be a really cool addition, especially if you could make the portals affect other characters in the game. And then the other one I had is I thought it would be really cool to do Wonder from Shadow of the Colossus, but make him very tiny so that all the other characters are colossi in comparison to him.
Are a stage. Oh, and that person plays it on the Wii U gamepad, so he's actually looking at it at a different scale. And so somebody's walking around fighting as though it's as usual, and then they just fall over and turn into black ribbons because they weren't paying attention to whether or not Wonder was on him.
And I'd have to go Rayman, but you have to keep him in the original art style.
Hmm.
Or not, sorry, not the original, the new art style, I guess.
The new art style is it is like a good adaptation of what the original was, because the original was also hand-drawn.
The better art style.
Yes.
There you go.
David.
Sure. I'm kind of looking forward to the Splatoon Inklings inevitably being in there, but... I think the one I'd really like to see, just because it would entertain me, is Freddy Fazbear.
Who the what?
The mascot from, I was about to say Freddy Got Fingered. No, Five Nights at Freddy's Got Fingered.
Oh, yes. Sure, okay, cool.
Yeah, I that would never happen, but I feel like you could actually make a pretty awesome character out of that.
He only moves, he can only, he's like a boo, he can only move when the characters aren't looking at him.
I know, I would just love to see, like, as you take damage, it becomes, like, more and more exoskeleton-y.
They haven't done that. They haven't done, like, deterioration, as far as I've seen.
No, they haven't, yeah. Which, like, for most of the characters, I feel like that's probably, like, makes sense, because, you know, like, very few of the characters, really, that's part of their thing, although mm-hmm. I'd like to see it for, you know, for, you know, characters where that does make sense.
Yeah.
So are you thinking, like, a Silent Hill type level for Smash Brothers? That could be cool, deterioration.
Yeah. Oh, just like it goes back and forth, kind of like, what is it, the Zebus level, where there's the acid and stuff. Like, it goes back and forth between regular world and nightmare world.
Mm-hmm. That actually could be a fairly legitimate level. Again, something that I feel like would not fit with the rating they're going for. But
let's get Pyramid Head in there.
Something that PlayStation All-Stars got really right is every single level is a mashup of two different video games.
Oh, well.
It's kind of cool. Yeah.
Can you give an example?
They had, I believe it was Metal Gear Solid with Loco Roco.
That is, and they had, very disparate.
Little Big Planet with Buzz, which was cool. And actually, the Buzz section was, so there's a trivia question and four platforms that you can fight on. And then, you know, if you're standing on any of the platforms that are wrong, when the timer goes off, you get, either die or you get damage. So
that's really cool.
Yeah, there's some really, really cool ideas in that.
How did they handle, like, the dramatically different, like, rating and tone of the characters?
They don't. They're just dramatically different.
Okay.
Which is, that's kind of what you want. Like, you don't want a kiddified version of whatever you're fighting with.
Yeah.
Although that's at least what you got with, like, Snake, for example.
Yes, he did not cut the throats of any of the other characters.
He
emphasized the like gunplay and mm-hmm. took out pretty much all CQC.
Well, no, CQC was Big Boss.
I'm going to disagree. I don't think he had many game or many guns with his fight set in the Wii version.
Oh, see, I just remember, like, rocket launchers as far as the eye could see. But yeah. Maybe that's just me. I haven't played the modern ones all that much, so I could be very mistaken.
I know his special move was, like, a grenade launcher on the screen, so that was a little bit over the top for Metal Gear. But
like, he threw around the orange box and a bunch of stuff. By which I mean the 2007 re-release of all the Half-Life 2s.
Gordon Freeman could also be an interesting
Gordon Freeman. Yeah.
Also, I would love, again, with items, I would love to be able to stick head crabs on my enemies.
We need to end this section. If you would like to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast in order to see these prompts and questions when they go up on Tuesday afternoons. And thank you so much to everybody who has participated. Sorry, we had to rush through the ones at the end there.
The grind.
It is now time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing over the past week or so. Does anybody have something they want to volunteer to go first with?
I don't mind going first.
Go ahead.
All right. So the one thing I do want to talk about is I did watch Evo over the weekend, so I got to see some of the Smash Brothers tournament and then Guilty Gear Xrd tournament, which I had never heard of the game before, but it was fun to watch the people play.
Really,
but
the top.
Super. Huh?
That's really. I think Jala is a big fan of that.
Okay. Yeah, no, it was fun. Evo is so cool. It's just so fun to watch people who are really, really good at video games play one another. And it's just cool to see, like, that tournament setting. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. But what I've been
playing, I picked up The Swapper, which I couldn't remember. Have any of you guys played The Swapper before?
Yeah, I've played some of it. I haven't finished it.
Okay, yeah. I remember, I think Geolol recommended it originally. It was the first I heard of it. But, yeah, no, it's pretty good. It's the premise of it is it's very similar to, like, a Dead Space sort of aesthetic where you're kind of wandering around a ship and you're doing different tasks with the ship. But it's completely different as far as style of game. It's a kind of like an indie puzzler game instead of a survival horror game. The gimmick of it is you can create clones of yourself anywhere that you can draw a straight line to on the map, and then you can swap between the clones and your original body. And so you basically take over the clone's body, and then that is now you. So sometimes you need to sacrifice the other versions of you in order to move around or get places. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. They create barriers where you can only create clones in certain areas, and then they create barriers where you cannot swap across certain areas. And then all the puzzles kind of stem from those mechanics. So
sounds
I think
like
I'm close
Portal
to,
in a way.
Yeah, it seems similar. It's a 2D game, so it's kind of platformy. Yeah, I think I'm almost finished with it, but so far it was just I picked it up for $3 on the PlayStation Flash sale, so it's been good so far. So yeah,
nice.
Any questions about the game?
Has the story gotten think about it yet?
It's kind of there already. I don't know. I mean the story's just there. I'm not really paying a whole lot of attention to it, but yeah, I think I'm tired of games where it's like, oh, something bad is happening beneath the surface. Can you feel that yet? You know, like, have we foreshadowed it enough yet?
Yeah.
You know, like, so, I feel like Portal was one of the original games to do that, maybe. But I feel like there have been so many games to do that ever since then. But yeah.
It's
the story.
A premise, though.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one nice thing I can say about it is at least, like, the story is tied to the mechanic that you're playing with.
Yeah.
So it's not kind of disconnected and on its own, just like, I can't believe, yeah, whatever. So
yeah,
at least it has a little bit of merit to it.
What do you think about the zero gravity portions of the game? Because always struck me as out of place.
The Swapper or Dead Space?
No, yeah, that's exactly right? So it's in The Swapper, but it's very Dead Space-esque. We're just, yeah, you're in zero gravity. You can use your gun to guide you. But I don't remember it ever really having a puzzle element. It always just felt like filler space that you had to navigate through.
Yeah, pretty much. All the places that are zero G are kind of places that you have to traverse through to get to the next puzzle area, not somewhere that's a puzzle itself. But I feel like maybe it's just a symptom of, if you're making a science fiction game, there has to be like a zero gravity portion of it, since it's so easy to do on the programming side, maybe.
Sure.
And
yeah,
cool,
unless that game is Destiny, in which case all planets have identical gravity.
Even the moon.
Yeah. Even the moon. Especially the moon. It has even more identical gravity than the others.
Each more identical than the last.
Huh. But yeah, so that's all I've been playing. I'll probably beat it next week. So
cool.
Sounds pretty sweet.
Nice. Let's see. I will go ahead and throw in with mine, because it's probably going to be pretty short. So I beat Dragon Age Inquisition.
Yay!
Yeah. So,
although
good,
do you appreciate the box art a lot more now after beating the game?
No, what's special about the box art? Like, I know
we'll
that...
talk about it after the podcast.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
After spoilers.
So, I'm grumpy about the game, and I don't know that time is making it better. Like, you know, get like the distance from it. I aired most of my grievances last week, insofar as the power system, where you have to do the side quests, and the side quests generally are not very entertaining or varied, and just kind of exist to make you run around very uninteresting open world areas. that still is incredibly frustrating to me, because there is good content. They're just actively trying to keep you from seeing it. And I don't think that they are rewarding good play or creating like an incentive for you to go in and see it. However, I will say I chose to try and get as many of those PowerPoints as I could from doing the companion side quests and what have you. And, you know, a good portion of those were genuinely affecting and good. You know, I don't want to get into too many specifics about which ones were like, oh, fuck yeah. But like, that stuff is cool. Again, I just wish there wasn't so much chaff to, you know, get in the way of it. Also, the ending comes on incredibly abruptly.
Like, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're saying you didn't expect the Inquisition?
Not even that. It's just kind of like, so the game has an antagonist, right? And you are spending most of the game doing these missions and running operations to try and, you know, take down his army and, you know, remove resources from him, et cetera, et cetera. By the time you get to the point where you can just like straight up fight him and end this, the stakes are just incredibly low because you have already defanged him entirely. And so I was expecting it to build to some kind of like big climax like it did in Dragon Age 2 and in Dragon Age 1, where, you know, whole cities were in the balance. And it was just kind of like, okay, go and, you know, let this foregone conclusion resolve itself of its own momentum. And it was like,
to be fair, that's probably more realistic,
I suppose. But it, like, realistic does not mean a good story or a good pace for a game.
Oh, yeah.
Comparing it to Knights of the Republic, which, you know, why not? They definitely kind of make a misstep in the fact that they don't really bring him up in the second half of the game, it seems, until the very end. So you kind of forget the reason of why he's a threat. And, you know,
yeah. And again, each of those little individual things you do along the way, pretty cool, like nice set pieces and stuff. But I just, I feel like overall, there is way too much laziness in between those moments of inspiration for me to have any goodwill towards this game. And it's super weird that, like, Dragon Age 2, for all of its flaws, ends up being, if not the best, at least my favorite game in this series.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
Even more so than 1. I think 1 has some very fundamental kind of like pacing and presentation problems that kind of get in the way. And also the companions, aside from Morrigan in 1, left something lacking, right? I think that there's enough weird and ambitious about Dragon Age 2 that I just, it's more memorable to me. And, you know, at the in the final estimation, what do you take away from these games aside from the cool memory of having played them? And the one that sticks out and is, you know, stickier as like a good positive experience is probably the one that, you know, it needs to be rewarded more, I guess. I don't know. Is that weird?
Sure. No, I can see that.
Sure, it's weird. I will say the one compliment I'll give to the game is the fighting system is at least fun. It's not like a balanced and great fighting system, but it is fun to all the fights that you engage in, I feel like. And in that respect, I think it's very similar to Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah, and they throw enough different kinds of enemies at you to keep it varied and keep it interesting, and you can engage it on your own terms, right? Like, you can make it as tactical and fiddly or as action-y as you want it to be based on either the actions that you take or the loadouts that you bring into an encounter.
Yeah.
Any other questions about that before I close the book on Dragon Age? Like, there are a bunch of side quests I ended up not doing, but most of it would probably be go to a place and do a thing. So,
yeah, I think one of the missteps is like they never really show you the effects of what you're doing. So, like, all the side quests that you're doing, they're, you know, in some way supposed to be limiting the power of the bad guy, right? But there's never any reinforcement of that. You know, you never see the effects of it. Outside of just increasing your power meter, you know?
Yeah. It's a little bit like, it's a bit of a bummer too, because like, I liked the war table stuff, like on the balance, like when I realized that the decisions I was making there was getting me into these little branching paths and things. And again, it's a little bit, it's like, it's realistic. A bunch of this stuff is stuff that you would send your agents and your, you know, your web of power out to go and take care of for you, right? Mm-hmm. But that is undercut by the fact that you're going and trying to return somebody's sheep because it's a beloved family sheep. Like, I'm reading these cool stories about intrigue in far-off cities that I'm sending agents out to do, and then I'm going and herding sheep because why the fuck not?
Hey, that's an insult to sheep priorities worldwide.
You know, I... I like
they've had it good for too long.
I like Yurimeet as much as the next guy, but enough is enough.
I'm really excited for you to start playing The Witcher.
Me too. I'm in a position right now where it is very possible that I will have beaten all the games that I own for a system.
Wow.
That is saying that you're going to beat The Witcher soon?
No. So this gets me to the next game that I've been playing, just because it is a more kind of achievable thing. Like, The Witcher is a spicy meatball that hot on the heels of Dragon Age, I don't know that I'm ready to go into. Whereas another game that I own for the PlayStation 4 is a little bit more kind of approachable, which is Grand Theft Auto 5.
Hey.
Yeah. Again, this is the summer of Ben. So I said a lot about this 2 years ago when the original version came out, and then when I played around with the PS4 kind of update and re-envisioning. So I'm going to not go on at length about it, just for fear of repeating myself, aside from, you know, to say that despite my objections to some of the content and the way it treats, you know, like just women and a bunch of stuff like that, you know, like I'm going to compartmentalize that and put it aside because it is my privilege to do so. And, you know, like I don't have to like live with that and, you know, have to, you know, take it personally. So I recognize that that is a privileged thing to be able to do, to ignore it. So I'm going to put all that over to the side and say that playing this game in first person mode and doing the things that it has you do, like on a mission-to-mission basis, it really kind of puts a bunch of the open world games that I've played recently to shame in both the variety of what it's having you do, the inventiveness with which it has you do it, and kind of the lighthearted spirit of fun that you do everything in. So my closest kind of like point of comparison behind this, you know, like Dragon Age, I've already like laid that out, but like, especially coming off of the heels of Batman, where everything was go here, destroy a bunch of tanks, and then get the data or set up the comm link so you can get the data. The fact that mission to mission, you're doing such different things really just kind of reminded me how good Rockstar is at doing this.
Okay.
Is my, it just, you know, like, and I understand that they are very different games and they're doing very different things, but like, I am like kind of shocked by how much this game is compelling me to go forward. And like, I'm even dipping into like some of the side stuff that I otherwise wouldn't do, like the Freaks and Strangers missions or whatever, like things that are actively, you know, stopping me from seeing the critical path, which is a story that I like the, you know, the arc and the characters are all engaging and interesting to me. Yeah, I don't know that I would have been, so I stalled out on the game like a third of the way through on PS3, and then I only got the PS4 one because it came with my system. I don't know that I would have enjoyed the game as much if I had just continued to play it in third person mode, actually. First person just makes the world feel different and bigger and kind of like more engaging in a way. And I think that kind of being down there in that perspective just changes it enough to make it feel less like, you know, any other of the many open world games I've been playing this summer for some reason. It makes me feel different enough that I'm like kind of like engaged and everything feels new and fresh, you know, like right down to the driving. Like driving in first person in the cockpit mode is really great for as difficult as it is, because every car kind of has its own different, you know, vantage point and sits in a different height in the road and whatever, just like a real car would. Like, it's, I don't know, it's engaging in a way that I didn't expect it to be.
How do drive-bys work?
You just pull up your gun and then aim it.
Okay, so you're like manually aiming it around the cockpit?
Yeah, yeah, and it's pretty forgiving. Like, it has the Call of Duty esque, like, it will snap you to the nearest target when you when you go into iron sights or whatever. So, like, it makes it, you know, you're not locking on like you would be in the other games, but it is friendly.
Sure. Cool.
I do want to praise GTA San Andreas for introducing that part where your shooting skill, the higher it got, the more quickly you would aim towards somebody's head and one-shot them.
Yeah.
Until you get the freaking dual pistols. Sorry. I still have a chip on my shoulder on that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's good. I'm probably going to beat it real soon. Like I just performed the next to last heist or whatever. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
The heist missions are so fun in that game.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Again, just variety, right? Like no two of them are the same. And the fact that, like, the missions that lead up to them have you doing different stuff in order to prepare towards a bigger goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's kind of weird because, like, there are still the missions where you are working for other people, but it definitely doesn't fall prey to the, like, you're doing quests for one guy until, you know, he dies or you find somebody else who will kill him and then you're doing quests for them. Like, you're kind of working for yourself in this, which changes up the structure and the motivations enough to, you know, to make it feel different than the rest of the games. I don't know. Like, different is good.
Does it seem like maybe some of that's kind of been inspired by some of the, you know, changes in popularity in some of the crime dramas recently?
Maybe. You mean like Breaking Bad and stuff, or like what?
Breaking Bad, maybe a little bit, The Wire, stuff like that, in terms of, you know, a little bit more personal, you know, approach to telling crime stories.
You know, I couldn't say. Like, I don't know that I can speak to really what is informed Grand Theft Auto as it goes along. Like, it pretty much just kind of has its pool of references that is draw, you know, that it draws from. So I can't speak authoritatively on that.
Sure, fair enough.
I can conjecture wildly if you would like me to, Ben.
If they had you falsifying police reports as a policeman, then I would say it draws inspiration from The Wire, but I don't know.
Well, yeah.
But also,
I mean, more in terms of, like, overall whatever. Not,
I mean, so game's 2 years old by now, and I'm sorry, Ben, if this trips your spoiler sensitivity, but, like, for a large portion of the game, like, a big part of the conflict is you are working for different corrupt branches of the game's version of the FBI.
Okay.
Like, people who have done you favors in the past who are, you know, up there in these agencies are bringing you in, and that is, like, kind of setting the stage and giving you access to all this hardware and other kinds of things you otherwise would have had to use. So there is a little bit of that, like, the system versus the system kind of things.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, that's all I've been playing. It's good. I like it a lot.
How do you like Trevor?
Oh, Trevor's great. Like that actor. Like, oh my god, that actor, Stephen Ogg or whatever he is. Mm-hmm. He showed up in Better Call Saul, and I kind of hope.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's a mercenary in, like, the next to last episode that Mike is working with. I really hope they end up bringing him back because I like that actor a lot.
Yeah. Is this was this the redneck guy in Grand Theft Auto?
Yeah, the psychopath. Kind of guy, yes. With all the tattoos. He's less yeah. Redneck and more, you know, cannibal.
The Joker.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
My favorite running gag. After a certain point, Michael realizes that Trevor's a hipster, and uses that as the hot button because Trevor hates hipsters. Oh man, pretty good. Even though hipster is a meaningless term. David, how about you? What you been playing?
Sure. Well, yeah, speaking of heists, my main what I've been playing is actually Cole. Yes, Cole, you did not know that you played this, but Dennis and me and Geolaw and Phil Holmes all Twitch Monaco. So
it was good times.
So Dennis, do you want to tag team this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Sweet.
I think that's your cue to go, Dennis.
Oh, that's, I'm horrible at introducing games. I hate doing it. So
he's tagging you in.
That was definitely a cue for I don't know how to introduce games.
I Monaco is like a top-down puzzle game where you kind of control one of many different members of a heist crew. What do you even call that? Criminal organization?
A crew.
Like, you know, heist, yeah, Cruise 11 style. Yeah.
Yeah, crew's good.
Yeah. So you know, there's one that can pick locks really fast. There's one that can see where guards are when they're not moving. And there's several. One has a disguise kind of automatically. And you kind of work together with all those different abilities to pull off various heists. And I think the thing that stuck out to me was that Monaco playing single player is an incredibly different game than Monaco playing multiplayer.
Would you say single player is more tactical, kind of more your traditional Ocean's 11 style, like, let's think through this heist thing?
Exactly. It's much more of a puzzle game, and the objective is to get all the gold in a level. So, you know, you can collect gold as you're going around, or bits, or I don't know, whatever those golden diamonds are. It's very kind of a low-res game. But you know, you're kind of thinking through every part of the level and exploring to find all the possible loot that's out there. Whereas multiplayer is much more of like a Benny Hill style, like running around and going through different doors and having people chase you all over frantic experience. And you're just trying to survive the level.
Yeah, it's one of the big things is this isn't exactly like called out. It's not obvious, but I feel like it's kind of important to how things play out. Is you basically you move at approximately same speed as the guards, but while the AI is fairly good, it's not exactly as like agile as you. So basically, you can do things like simply running around a column. Might not ever get you to escape, but it's a completely effective way to like not get shot by a given guard. So it ends up ending up being like very key Keystone Cops thing where like if you need if you need your hacker to open up a door so that you can escape before getting shot, it's completely legitimate for you to just keep running in and out of the same room, Scooby-Doo style or whatever.
Yeah.
It seems like it's, it does, it really supports that. I feel like also, like, in addition to that, just the actual gameplay being good, I feel like with the character abilities, it really supports that. So, like, one of my favorite things was, I believe it was Phil was playing the, what is the minor heister? The mole, yeah. So, you can just, like, straight up tunnel through basically any part of the level that isn't explicitly, like, metal walls, which usually tends to be, say, like, actual bank vaults and, like, things where it would completely screw up the game. But so most of the level you can just straight up mine through. And one, it's fun. It's kind of fun because it's overtly loud. So it doesn't work with like any sort of stealth support. But we had several times where like usually me, because I'm awful at the game, like would get taken down and like we're like frantically trying to get away from like 15 guys with machine guns. And Phil's like, oh no, guys, I've totally gone, Hogan's Heroes on this level and have, like, this vast network of tunnels I've been digging while you've been dicking around. And so we just, like, take the tunnels to, like, escape with all our loot.
Oh, yeah. Those lovable Nazis.
But yeah, it's really good. I would say my only complaint with it, and I think this is something that innately you couldn't have, if they did this, you couldn't have probably the fun experience we've been talking about. But I do kind of wish that you could do a little bit more of the traditional heist stuff in multiplayer. But I mean, that's you know, then I wouldn't have gotten the awesome other experience I got.
Yeah, like you could plan it out, and I'm sure it would be fun to or feel good to kind of perfectly execute a heist. But the game just isn't that precise,
right? And so, exactly. Like,
you know, they post high scores for the levels, and there are 4-person teams that do it insanely well. But it is when you've got multiple players there, the fun really isn't just this, you know, screaming around the level, avoiding guards and ducking into tunnels.
Right. Yeah, I think another thing that really deserves to be called out is like the aesthetics in the game are really amazing.
My complaint is go ahead, but I we'll okay. See.
Yeah, I really like the level layout itself, and particularly like any part of the level that you don't have a line of sight to is basically a heist style blueprint. And we'll have like the notes on like, you know, guards here, disconnect this junction box or stuff like that. So, and then once you actually have line of sight, it'll then sort of, you know, fill in. And likewise, you know, the characters are all, I don't know, I'm horrible with like what level of how many bits of, you know, pixel art they'd have, but they're all very, they kind of evoke what the character is supposed to be, as opposed to actually looking like what the character is supposed to be, if that makes sense.
Very yeah. Abstract,
stylized.
Yeah, well, not even just that. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, if you actually look at the details, not necessarily anything looks like anything, but at the same time, when you look at it, you can definitely tell. In particular, I think two of the models I really like is the gentleman, which is basically the most interesting man in the world, and then the lookout, which is one of two female characters, and in particular, like the other female character is basically like the seductress type character. So, you know, it's, you know, kind of the stereotypical, you know, that sort of look. But then the lookout is, you know, kind of a more you know, less overt, you know, more realistic female character or whatever. And just the way, I don't know, just I really like the way she looks versus the other characters, in that you can tell that, you know, it's meant to be a woman, but there's not really anything you can really pick out that I don't know if that makes sense at all.
It like everything cuts a distinctive enough silhouette that you can distinguish it from a glance. So having not played this game and really just looked at video footage or kind of screenshots, which are not really representative of the experience of playing it, everything looks incredibly busy to me. And it looks like it'd be very difficult to keep track of what's going on, or to kind of like watch what the active character should be in relation to kind of all of the other similarly kind of like broad and colorful and chunky images that are moving around as it goes on. Is that a part of the experience? Is it, you know, something that they are intentionally doing to like disorient you and, you know, managing that as part of being good at the game? Or is it just kind of like a side effect that you kind of have to live with in order to play this?
See, I would agree with David on the character side, in that, you know, for very simple characters, they look very distinct. And I think that they've done an incredibly good job with that. I really hate the whole blueprint to line of sight map thing. That is the most disorienting part for me. Not anything to do with how blocky it is or the fidelity, but just the fact that the landscape you're looking at is constantly changing based on your line of sight is really, really hard to wrap your mind around. Especially because I don't think the blueprints do that good a job of communicating what the actual layout is. So I think I can't decide where it is. The fact that your level is kind of constantly and dynamically switching back and forth between these two views is really tough. And then one of the views is just not incredibly helpful those two things combined, it kind of make it hard to follow. But like I said, when you are kind of just having fun with it and running around, that's not as much of an issue. But if we were actually trying to do something serious, it's really distracting. It sounds like a great idea on paper. Like, hey, it's a blueprint when you can't see it, and then it's real life when you can't. That makes real intuitive sense. But it's just when it actually is executed, it doesn't play out that well.
Hmm. Sure. I definitely agree that I have a hard time. Like, obviously it can be, but I definitely agree. I don't think the aesthetic works real well with the actually trying to be sneaky, you know, kind of be a professional approach for the more running around. Yet to me, I guess it almost struck me as something that it's kind of like you don't focus your eyes and you just kind of flow with it. Like not to just speak in stupid metaphors, but like it's definitely busy. It's definitely, you can't ever exactly tell what's going on, but I felt like you kind of reacted to the situations, and I don't know. In terms of like finding your character, I think one of the big things is each of the classes explicitly has a color associated with them that, you know, their character model is either entirely, almost entirely made up of. And they're all, you know, very bright and distinctive. So I think that makes it so you don't lose your actual character.
Hmm.
Yep.
Is this a game that is meant to be played with voice chat? Because it seems like coordinating your efforts is very important based on the fact that the different classes are so specialized. Is that something you guys did? Is that something they kind of like afford you, or are there tools to, you know, let you get around and serve your role without needing to, you know, say red team go, red team go?
We played it with voice chat, and I can't imagine not doing it without that.
I don't think we exactly coordinated all that much. Or at least I don't think me and Dennis did. I think our other members maybe had a little bit more idea, but I would say it's more voice chat is necessary because it's almost a party game.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, side note, and we, you know, it's getting late, so we shouldn't go into this necessarily, but I think the music was excellent, and, look at sometime, pull up, the guy who made its blog post on how, level files work are really is very cool. It's like level files basically are images, and it's set up so that you can look at the image and get a basic idea of the characteristics of the level.
And then get sound from that.
Say that again.
And then get sound from that, from what the level looks like.
Yeah. So it's things. Like, and I'm just kind of on the top of my head, but it's this idea where it's like maybe like enemies will be like red. So if you look at the image file, it's just an abstract thing, but you can tell by like how many shades of red. Like, is this a real enemy heavy map, or is it a hacker focused map, or like you can get a feel for the characteristic just by looking at the file.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David, you played anything else besides Monaco?
No, that was it.
Cool. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so you got Monaco, and then my one other game that I continued to play was the Banner Saga, which I won't give away plot spoilers, but my God, does shit get real. The game is very, very simple visually. It's kind of a hand-drawn style, and it's basically like you can see your clan or whatever walking across the landscape, but it manages to turn that very simple visual style into some of the most epic moments I've ever seen. Like I was kind of like almost falling out of my chair, like, what is happening? When it's really just, you know, very simple presentation.
Is it
so? I can appreciate that.
Like the visual style, it's like hand drawn, like not quite anime, but like rough sketchy, relatively
like
high
Scooby,
detail,
Scooby
right?
Scooby-Doo level?
Yeah, like Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
It
kind of reminds me of some of the really good, like, I think, were they 90s era, like, like feature-length fantasy cartoons they did?
How about this?
Yeah,
how about the Rankin-Bass Hobbit and Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Sure. Yeah,
kind of
in that vein. Yep. So it's that, but then, you know, so you kind of get, it does the, when you're doing the plot stuff and the conversation stuff, it's kind of talking headshots of these characters. But then as you're traversing the world, the characters are just these kind of little dots on the map, essentially, as they walk across the horizon, and kind of you're seeing a very zoomed out view. And I think it's that place where when stuff starts happening to the world around them in that view, just feels really, really epic. So, that is very well executed and left my jaw on the floor. It was described to me by Mikhail as the Oregon Trail with kind of real time or turn based strategy, which is a very apt description. Especially now that I feel like my choices are becoming more and more meaningful, and I'm actually like gaining or losing characters because of the choices that I make, or because of my indecision sometimes, or I've gotten to a place where like I've run out of supplies and I've watched the clansmen that I'm running with. Clansmen sounds funny. The people in my clan.
it's out there forever. You can't stop it.
Yeah,
just embrace it.
But kind of watch them die off every day because I didn't pack enough supplies for them or that sort of thing. So, like as the game is unfolding, I'm starting to really feel the weight of my decisions. And combat plays into that. Like there was a combat encounter where it kind of made very clear, like, hey, if someone dies in this encounter, they're not coming back.
Yeah.
Which is crazy considering that there, it's a very involved story. So,
Yeah. Sure. You're making it sound like Fire Emblem a little bit, where if Darth dies, Marth dies of loneliness as well. He just kind of withers on the vine.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
So is
I
it,
am familiar with Fire Emblem, but.
So is it like real big on like political intrigue type stuff, or is it more of like a epic, like, tales of combat and stuff like that? Or kind of what's its kind of storytelling angle, I guess?
It's really, really interesting. Like I love the world this is set in. So it's set in the kind of Norse mythology Viking world.
Sure.
With humans and giants. The gods have died. Everyone knows that. And the sun has, and that happened a while ago, and the sun has suddenly stopped moving. And that's like the backdrop for everything. So like the sun is just fixed in the sky, which is really kind of funny because it sounds so huge, but at the end of the day, you kind of forget that it's up there. It's like they'll reference it every once in a while, but everyone's just kind of like, oh yeah, the sun stopped moving. Wonder what we should do about that.
It's just because they couldn't figure out the day-night cycle.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, considering it's like in the far north where it's, day for half of the year, like how long did it take them to figure that out?
Yeah, exactly. But so the idea is that the dredge, which is this kind of orc/zombie type of race that was beaten back a long, long time ago, has started kind of reappearing in huge numbers, on top of, like I said, the sun freezing in the sky, and everyone's kind of on the run from them and trying to figure out what to do about it and what's going on. So there's kind of that aspect to it, but then there is also a lot of political intrigue. You start as kind of the historian for the Varl, which are the giants. And you kind of are watching these, important figures interact and not get along. And then, the dredge conflict kind of escalates on top of that. And they really make it do a good job of making it feel like you are in kind of an overwhelmed situation. Like it does at no point in this game have I felt like I am in control or on the offensive. Like you are on the run and things are spinning out of control. So I'll be excited to see how that resolves.
Sure. Is it a fairly high magic setting?
No, in fact, I would say no magic.
Okay, okay. So definitely some mythology, but no magic.
Yeah, yeah. Like, cool. It's kind of funny. Like I said, the gods were definitely a thing. They were definitely, you know, around and extant. And then something happened and the gods died. And everyone just kind of shrugged and went on living. Hmm. So that's like, it's like part of their history. But they're, you know, they're not around anymore that I know of to this point in the story. We'll see.
Sure. That sounds really cool.
So you haven't beaten your first run through the game. Are you kind of seeing hooks, or are you kind of getting motivated to think like, oh, I might want to take another crack at this to see how things would shake out if I take kind of a different path?
No, I think this is going to be like a Heavy Rain style situation.
Oh yeah.
Where it's like, hey, you know, I played through, I got my story, and it would feel disingenuous to go back and try to modify what I did. Yeah. And there's like, I've made significant mistakes. Like I know at least two instances where my indecision has caused deaths in my party.
Yeah.
Or caused things that I didn't want to happen.
Yeah.
And so like, it's like I actually don't even know if you can reload a save. I think the thing auto saves. So I think I'm kind of on rails for this. It's Iron Man by default.
Yeah.
We'll say.
Well, I mean, you can't lie to games after all games are done for you, you know?
Yeah. yeah. So I think it is a great game for having all the branching storylines, but the hook is not to go back and see how else it branches.
Hmm.
The hook is that it feels like you're getting a story personalized to you.
Nice.
Are you playing this on PS4?
No, on my Mac.
Yeah.
Okay.
I see you pop up on Steam playing it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been playing.
Cool. I'll be curious to hear your kind of like final summation of how it lands for you, because something that is being that kind of like serious, I'm always skeptical of its ability to its ability to have the necessary gravitas to pull it off and sell it. And how it sticks to landing probably will have a lot of impact on that for you.
Yeah. I was thinking the exact same phrase. I hope it sticks to landing. Yeah. But if how they handled the shit is getting real moments, that I've experienced so far, they'll do an excellent job of it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Was that all?
That's it.
All right. Y'all want to button it up?
Mm-hmm.
The credit. That was episode 113 of The Level. I'm still not used to the whole triple digit thing, but here we are, and here we will remain.
So many extra syllables.
I know, right? It makes it really hard because I have to time out the intro beat to where the first non-percussion sound is right after I say level in the title, like welcome to the so-and-so level. And normally I was able to start the percussion right at welcome, but now it's edging a couple of syllables into that, and I'm not comfortable with it at all.
we could do it in hex.
I suppose we could. What is it? This is, I'm not even going to pretend.
113. I'm horrible with that. I always use a calculator.
This is called,
I am horrible
sniping
at my job. So, it would be 71.
Okay, cool. So thank you for listening to episode 71 of The Level. Oh, there are 71 kinds of people in the world. No, but if you want to help the show out, boy, just tell your friends. Like, I want more people to listen to this. So point them to to your favorite episode. We like to think that these are evergreen to a certain extent, even though it is a little bit like a news magazine. A little bit. It's kind of a mixture. But it's heartening to see some new names in the multiplayer responses every week, mostly for the past so and so on the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. So those of you who are spreading the word, we really appreciate it. Those of you who are new and listening here recently, boy, we appreciate it too.
And tell us how to pronounce your names.
Yes, please do. That is not a joke. Like, we joke about it.
Yeah,
but,
all
like,
joking aside, yeah.
Yeah, just it makes us feel, you know, we don't want to be inconsiderate. So if you like hearing us twist in the wind, you know, don't let us tell you what to do. But it is a great way to make sure that we give you proper credit when you ask a or when you provide a cool answer to the questions that that we ask. If you are going to be starting classes up soon, or if you have any kind of back to school shopping that you're doing for your kids, a great place to do that is duckfeed.tv/tipjar. There is a link to Amazon that you can find there. That is an affiliate link. You go there, you buy what you're going to buy on Amazon, and then we get a kickback from that. And it doesn't cost you anything extra, and that goes a long way towards helping support the network and our efforts here. So I just want to give a little bit of a shout to that. But otherwise, just keep on listening, and we really appreciate you guys giving us the time. Is there anything that I'm forgetting?
Not just the title.
Have a good week.
Okay. Yeah. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
From time to time, I've been David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
And I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And until next time, it's a shame that Five Nights at Freddy Got Fingered is such an underrated movie. Guys, I'm so sorry. I know that for the past however many episodes, I've left it up to like a consensus kind of thing. I can't let that one slip by.
Yeah, my two submissions were going to be the Whippy Belmont and Summer of Ben.
We've already done the Summer of Ben.
Oh, have we done Summer of Ben? Okay, yeah. I'm glad.
That's what I was referencing.
I still like the Whippy Belmont, but no, I think Five Nights at Freddy Got Fingered.
Apparently, this podcast has a problem with heroes.